We're looking tonight at Nehemiah chapter 12. And my title for this evening's message is Prescribed Worship. Prescribed Worship. I think it's a topic that we're all familiar with, worship and how we should worship the Lord. But we come across it in this Old Testament chapter in quite a clear way, actually, and a remarkable way, how Nehemiah, even though he was born in Babylon, he's familiar with the way of prescribed worship. And he knows what the instructions that God gave to David. He couldn't just go about this dedication of the wall, which we'll mention in a minute, in his own way and with his own ideas and come up with his own plan, how things should be done. No, we'll see, and as you notice in our reading, they were very specific. They were very to follow the prescribed way. They didn't just include any old instruments or as many instruments as they wanted. No, they chose just four instruments, even as that was prescribed to David by the Lord in 1 and 2 Chronicles, as we'll see in a minute. But firstly, we just have a look at beginning at verse 27. At the dedication of the wall of Jerusalem, they sought the Levites out of all their places to bring them to Jerusalem to keep the dedication with gladness, both with thanksgivings and with singing, with cymbals, psalteries, and with harps. And so my first point for tonight really is a very simple one, ready for service. It's time for the dedication of the wall, another blessed day for the people, the Jews, the Israelites. They've had a number of good days. They've had a number of days of joint worship. They've had that Feast of Tabernacles for a good 8 days. They had that day of humiliation as well. And now they have yet another day when they all come together, and it's another day of joy and gladness as they remember God's goodness to them. The wall is complete. It wasn't an easy task. It wasn't all easy going. They had had opposition. They had had trouble from the enemies. But all those troubles were to prove them. How would they react as well when those enemies came? When troubles came, would they depend on the Lord? Or would they try and fix things by themselves? How would Nehemiah manage the situation? How would the people of God react? Well, they depended on the Lord. And the Lord intervened in a miraculous way, exposing the plans and the plans and the intentions of the evil one, even before they could carry it out, the plans of their enemies. And again, those enemies were thwarted. It was hard work for the people. It was tiring work. There were times when they were very tired in the labors, and for a while the work did stop, but then they picked up their sword and their trowel again. And they continued watching and working until it was done. Working together, as we've mentioned so many times, and so quickly the work was done. As they put their minds together, put their minds to it, everyone put his shoulder to the work, and a lot was accomplished in just those 52 days. Well, now it's time to give God thanks. Now it's time to rejoice and give him the glory with thanksgivings and with gladness. And here we see with singing, with cymbals, psalteries, and with harps, verse 27. Now, of course, the wall, the dedication of the wall, is not just the wall that's going to be dedicated, but everything that's included within Jerusalem, everything that's the wall, that's inclusive of that wall. So you think of the temple, again, restored to some, a measure of glory again and functioning again, the sacrifices happening there, and all that is within this holy city is dedicated to the Lord, set apart for the Lord, set apart for his name to dwell there, set apart for his honor and for his glory, all the houses and the buildings within the city, a holy city, no other city like it in the world, dedicated to the Lord, only this place, Jerusalem, restored in a measure to something of its former glory after being ransacked by the king of Babylon. Or the Levites are summoned to come, the sons of the singers. The Levites are all summoned. Come out of your homes where they are and look where they're located. They're located in the suburbs of Jerusalem, verse 28, and then in the villages around it. In verse 29, we see the singers had built them villages round about Jerusalem. They lived within the vicinity of Jerusalem. It's like they were scattered around the city of Jerusalem in their own villages, a commutable distance, so that they could come as and when they were needed. They had easy access, quick access to get to Jerusalem. And of course, all the tithes and offerings would have been stored in these cities, and they could easily be transported to Jerusalem as and when needed. But they were close by. And it's a sort of like a picture for us, isn't it, of how believers should be, the church should be the center of the life for believers. Just like these Levites, there were quite a number of them in David's time. There was equal to about 4,000 people, 4,000 Levites, 4,000 who were appointed by David. I don't know if it's the same number at this time, but there would still have been quite a number, and they took turns. So they had two-week shifts. They would come in from the different villages for 2 weeks and then depart, and another group would come in. There was this rota system going on to serve the temple and to, whether it's the singing or the offerings that were undertaken, they undertook this rota system. So they all lived within the vicinity of Jerusalem. And it's a lesson for each one of for us as well, as is the church as well at the center of our lives, at the center of our thinking. That we're not just thinking about physically. It's good to live close to the church if one can, or at least in a commutable distance to the local church. But not to have the church as something on the periphery on our lives, or to have the church as just an add-on to our lives. But is the church and the work of God and the kingdom of God and the worship of God central in our thoughts, in our thinking, in our lives, so that we can always be involved in the worship, so that we can be involved in the activities of the church? It has a primary place in our hearts, in our prayers, in our life. So here, just as the Levites were ready for service, we also should be ready for service in the Lord's house. Verse 30, they purified, the priests and Levites purified themselves and purified the people and the gates and the wall. Probably by the sprinkling of water and the offering of sacrifices, the people were made clean for this activity. And then secondly, we can see this. My second point is prescribed worship. Now, in verse 31, we see how when everyone was gathered together, they gathered together on the south wall, and Nehemiah then breaks up the whole company into two groups. One is going to be led by Ezra, and Nehemiah is going to go with the other. In fact, Nehemiah didn't lead them. Ezra led them, but Nehemiah went behind. And these two companies were made up of the leaders in Jerusalem at the time, the men of the chiefs at the time, and also the priests and the singers went, and those who were also playing musical instruments, those who had rather trumpets. We read that in verse 35. Certain of the priests' sons with trumpets, namely Zechariah, the son of Jonathan, and so on. So these two different groups, Ezra's group goes from the south in this anti-clockwise direction, heading round to the north, and Nehemiah goes in the opposite direction. They meet at the top, and they meet where the temple is, and they come together in the temple area. And in verse 40, so stood the two companies of them that gave thanks in the house of God, and I and the other half of the rulers with me. Well, they're there, they're marching, they were singing psalms, the hymn book of the church at that time, and they were accompanied by musical instruments. And when they met in the temple again, we read that the singers sang very loudly. But as I said at the beginning, they did all these things from a prescribed way. The instruments that were chosen, which are here, have been mentioned in verse 27, the cymbals, the psalteries, the harps, and then verse 36, the 35, the trumpets. All these have been prescribed by David. It wasn't just according to their own fancy. This was something that 550 years ago, God told David, these are the only things that are prescribed for worship in the temple and the worship of God. Just have a look at verse 24. You can see this. They did things with their brethren over against them to praise and to give thanks according to the commandment of David, the man of God, ward over against ward. Again, verse 36. With the musical instruments of David, the man of God, and Ezra the scribe before them. Verse 45. And both the singers and the porters kept the ward of their God and the ward of the purification according to the commandment of David and of Solomon his son. Well, where does David say this? You could, if you look at 1 Chronicles 15, we can see what they're referring to. This is when they brought up the ark the second time. Do you remember the first time they brought up the ark and they were trying to bring it into the city of David, but the first time they didn't do it in the prescribed way, and so judgment, the Lord brought judgment upon them. Then the second time, David made sure that it was done in the right way. And we read 1 Chronicles 15 and verse 16. And David spoke to the chief of the Levites to appoint their brethren to be singers with instruments of music, psalteries and harps and cymbals, sounding by lifting up the voice with joy. So you see, these are the only instruments which are mentioned. At the time, in the society there were 8 or 9 different instruments available. But God said to David, and through the prophets, the only ones that you should use are the psalteries and the harp, which is a kind of stringed instrument, and harps and cymbals and nothing else, and the trumpets also. In 2 Chronicles 29, we can see what Hezekiah did. Hezekiah also followed this prescribed way of worship, which was given not to Moses, but to David. 2 Chronicles 29 and verse 25. Well, So in verse 3, this is Hezekiah in the first year of his reign, in the first month, opened the doors of the house of the Lord and repaired them. And then they had to clean out the house of the Lord. And then when they were ready to dedicate it, verse 25, he set the Levites in the house of the Lord with cymbals, with psalteries, and with harps, according to the commandment of David and of Gad the king's seer and Nathan the prophet, for so was the commandment of the Lord by his prophets. So here we see even Hezekiah is following what God has said. And the Levites stood with the instruments, verse 26, of David, and the priests with the trumpets. And Hezekiah commanded to offer the burnt offering upon the altar And when the burnt offering began, the song of the Lord began also with the trumpets and with the instruments ordained by David, king of Israel. And all the congregation worshipped, and the singers sang, and the trumpeters sounded, and all this continued until the burnt offering was finished. So we can see again quite clearly that even though there were other instruments that could have been used, only these particular ones were chosen. And then we have to ask the question, why? Why does God limit instruments? Well, the answer is because worship, they would have been easily distracted in their worship. If they had a number of musical instruments and a rhythm and a beat, if they had a big orchestra, well, the people would have been carried away more with the music than they would have with worshiping the Lord and singing his praise. So it was the number of instruments was restricted in temple worship. Nothing wrong if they wanted to use it on a social basis. And the trumpets, we say a little bit about the trumpets. Well, they were used at special occasions as well, and to call the people together on military celebrations, but also in a little bit in the temple, as we read just now, here in verse 28. The people sang and the trumpeters sounded, but only until the burnt offering was finished, and then the trumpets ceased. They stopped at that time, and the singing continued. So I just put those before you so that you probably are aware of those texts of Scripture, but just to show you that very specific commands were given to David. Later on, those four would be reduced to two, not in the temple in Jerusalem, but in the other place, the local synagogues around Jerusalem. They wouldn't have the trumpets. They only had the psalter and the harp. They didn't have the cymbals, just two. And again, it's to remind the people that beautiful music, wonderful as it is, mustn't be a distraction. Worship was to be a solemn event, a reverent event. Yes, with loud voices. Yes, with joy. Not with moroseness, but with joy and gladness. Even as we see the people, well, they rejoiced. They were full of joy in verse 43. That also that day they offered great sacrifices and rejoiced with great joy. They didn't need all the great instrumentality to be joyful. They rejoiced because of what God had done for them. And this should be the believer's viewpoint as well. When he comes to church, he rejoices because of what God has done for him and for his people. So even though this pattern of worship is for the Old Testament, really, and we are not under the Old Testament rules for worship, yet the general principles still apply for us. And that is, of course, that we worship in God in the Spirit. And we don't want to include a lot of instruments lest we ourselves are distracted and we get caught up in the beat and the rhythm. And so we have just, as you know, one automated machine at the moment. Hopefully you can get a physical person behind the piano at some time. But we have just one to give us the tune and to know the way that we should be going, to keep us in tune as a congregation. But the words is what is more important. And so we follow this general principle, worshiping God in the Spirit and in truth. When you think about worship today, so many people go to church to receive, isn't it? Oh, we had a good time of worship today, they say. What do they mean? I mean, our feelings were elevated. Oh, the music was great. The music touched me. The music uplifted me. It's very self-centered, isn't it? Whereas worship really is objective and giving to God and praising him. He is the one that we come to give to. even if we don't really feel like giving. So these things, friends, I say it tonight, but it's really to teach, again, a lesson for us and for churches, that churches are not free to introduce all kinds of instrumentation into the church. So when people say to us, well, we should bring in the bands, we should have the many instruments, we have to say, well, we are following a biblical pattern, a biblical principle, by not having those things. Well, in verse 43, as I mentioned, the people were full of joy. God had made them joyful, and they sing aloud. They're very glad. The wives and the children also are rejoicing. They have so much to be thankful for. And what a testimony that must have been. The sound of their joy, it seems, was heard afar off, outside Jerusalem. And what a testimony to those who were unbelievers must have heard these things, the voice of their singing and rejoicing. Well, finally, in verses 44 to 47, we have my third point, conscientious living. And here we see how the people were so glad, the people were pleased that the priests and the Levites were carrying out their duty. They willingly brought in their tithes and their offerings and their first fruits out of the fields into the cities. And they were glad that the work in the temple and the worship in the temple was ongoing. In verse 45, we see the singers and the porters kept the ward of their God and the ward of the purification. What's that mean? Well, that's referring here to work, especially of the porters, the gatekeepers, to keep out anyone who was an unclean person, to make sure no unclean person entered into the temple and into its courts. And the singers also helped them. That's also a commandment of the Lord. And you can read that in 2 Chronicles 23 as well. And then finally, verse 47, everyone paid their dues so that the service in God's house could continue uninterrupted. The priests, the people brought their offerings, their first fruits unto the Levite and tithes to the Levites, and the Levites gave a tenth of all that they received to the priests, and everyone had sufficient for the work. And so they were very careful, just pointing out to you once again in this how conscientious they were about the way that they did things. They were careful to do things correctly. And grace, friends, teaches us to live in this way. When we truly come to know the grace of God, it teaches us to walk conscientiously. We are often accused by some groups to say, oh, you're saved by grace, you can do what you like. You can sin as you like. No, we say. Grace doesn't teach us to do that. Grace teaches us to walk in a righteous way and in a way that wants to please God more and more. We desire His blessing. And if we desire God's blessing, then we must do things also in the prescribed way. We dare not do our own. If we have success, if people have success of their own making without God's blessing, is that a blessing? To have church numbers grow and you haven't followed God's method for church growth, is that a blessing? I don't think so. I don't think having lots of numbers means you have God's blessing. We have to do things in His way. All through the scriptures, this is always in some way or other indicated to us that if we desire His blessing upon our work together, then we must do things in the way that He has prescribed. So may the Lord help us to be conscientious as individuals and conscientious also as a church.